So I'd like to introduce our very first speaker today, who is Dr. Richard Radisky. And Dr. Radisky has a PhD in Environmental Health Sciences from the University of Michigan and is currently a professor of water resources at the Annis Water Resources Institute at Grand Valley State University. He researches chemical fate and transport, environmental toxicology, water quality assessment, and water resource systems for developing countries. And this morning he'll give us a presentation including results from his survey of household water quality in rural Haiti. And his co-authors on this work are Peter Wampler, Azizer Mola, and himself, Richard Radisky. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you very much for coming at 8:30 again. And I want to share with you some work that we're doing in Haiti. And a lot of the pictures that you see of Haiti are in Port-au-Prince. Once you get out of Port-au-Prince, Haiti looks like that. It's an incredibly beautiful country. And I have no relationships to disclose. That's the number one slide of the whole presentation. But anyway, water problems in Haiti are very severe. Access to improved water remains the lowest in the Western Hemisphere, about 51% versus 80% for rural areas in Latin America. Only 10% of rural Haitians have access to improved sanitation facilities. So there's a very severe lack of sanitation facilities. 76% of rural Haitians do not treat their water. And 25% of the children below five had diarrhea in the past 2 weeks. So a very serious problem with waterborne diseases. And we started our research in 2011. I had a grad student that went to Haiti and did a survey of 55 biosand filters. And only 53% of those were functioning. And biosand filter is a really simple technology. It should be working all the time, but only 53% of our homes that we visited had functioning filters. The average lifespan was less than 1 year, and the longest surviving one was 12 years. So it's a very good technology if you know what you're doing running them. 95% E. coli removal, so they were very effective. But lifestyle, incompatibility, incomplete training, economic issues, and maintenance were the causes of the failure. This was published in Journal of Water Sanitation and Hygiene for Development. So the problem that we saw was that sustainable clean water interventions must be culturally appropriate, and we must have the local capacity for education and maintenance. You can't just drop the filters off. We can't, as scientists, be analyzing data, publishing papers, installing filters, and then leave. We've got to do something more. And most water quality interventions lack ethnographic assessments. So my colleague, Dr. Mola, is a medical anthropologist, and he did the ethnographic assessments, which really opened up a lot of information. I learned that a sociologist asks 10 questions to 100 people, and an anthropologist asks 100 questions to 10 people. So the amount of information you get is very good. One of the problems with Haiti is the geology, and this is something that's not being considered very much, but it's entirely fractured limestone karst. And we consider karst as being, Mammoth Cave area, and it's relatively solid, but because of all the seismic activity, as you can see, there's a lot of fractures, and all the springs are fed by these fractures. That's a typical spring where people would go to get water in Haiti. So what happens? There's no soil, so there's no soil treatment if waste is deposited on the surface. And if you dig a pit latrine, you could have very severe problems because it could get into those fractures and drain. So the water can travel 250 meters per hour in a karst system. And the real issue is rain events can mobilize the pathogens. And the bacteria in a karst setting are often protected because there's lack of turbidity. There's not a lot of ciliates and other kinds of organisms that would feed on the pathogens. So the low turbidity water prevents natural biofilm. So it's a very sensitive area. There's abundant water because it's karst, but it's very sensitive. So when you consider interventions, pit latrines may not be the best idea. Our 2012 research, we went in May for 10 days. We collected 100 samples. We visited 100 homes. 60 ethnographic interviews, 6 focus groups, and we worked with Hopital Albert Schweitzer. This is a cross-section of all the wonderful people we met, and we interviewed them for about 45 minutes each, learned a lot, and just a very interesting process for a scientist like myself. This is Deschapelles. This is the location of Hopital Albert Schweitzer. It's about 2 hours north in the Artibonite Valley. And we came up with a random sampling method. Our first study of biosand filters wasn't random. We had trouble publishing it, but we finally got it published. But we decided we use Google Earth, GIS, and Excel, and handheld GPS units to do this. And I've got some pictures that'll show the process. But we identified the homes with Google Earth because you can see the tin roofs real easily from the aerial photos. We exported them into ArcMap, and then we got the coordinates for each site, put it in Excel for random number selection, and then exported our coordinates to the handheld GPS. So every morning we would have 15 homes that we could go to in our order. And 96% of the time we were correct in identifying occupied dwellings from the aerial photos. So it was a very good method. And the interesting thing was only 3.6% of the occupants declined to be interviewed, which was surprising. So here were foreign people coming into another country, and they were all, most everyone was willing to talk to us. This is a picture of the Google Earth image, and you can see how easy it is to pick homes and then put all that into Excel. You just download the coordinates. And we also decided to look and see if there was an influence from Hopital Albert Schweitzer, so we drew some buffer areas, and we looked at 1-kilometer intervals. The thing was that everybody, even 10 kilometers away, was visited by a health worker from Hopital Albert Schweitzer, so even we weren't able to discern any areas that were not visited, but it's kind of hard to believe given the mountainous area, how diligent the people at the hospital are. And things look really close together when you see that, but when you actually look at the topography, you can see that one house, even though it looks close, could be below one ridge and up another and below another and up another. So sometimes we got 6 to 8 houses done, sometimes we only got 4 just because of the access issues. But this was how we laid out our sampling grids. And this is the Artibonite Valley, and I can't think of a more beautiful place. We worked every day in the mountains from the villages way off to the left-hand side, and just a gorgeous river. It's hard to believe that was the area of the cholera epidemic, too. We used the CoAlert method, which is a real simple technique. Instead of, you know, plating things, it has a defined substrate. It's got 2 sugars, one that's 2 dyes that are attached to 2 different sugars, one for the coliform group, one for E. coli. You incubate it for 18 hours, and you get your results. We also measured residual chlorine with a hot kit and specific conductance and turbidity. And this is just a picture of adding the reagents. You essentially convert the entire sample into a growth media, and then the colonies that are E. coli are glow in ultraviolet light, so it's real easy to differentiate. And there's a source water sample versus a biosand filter sample. So all you need is three suitcases, one suitcase of your media, one suitcase for the tray sealer, and one suitcase for the incubator, and you're ready to go. Our results were pretty remarkable. We tested 7 rivers, and 6 of them were too numerous to count. It was very hard for us to dilute samples because we didn't have sterile water, but the water quality in rivers was bad. We tested 3 pump wells. These were installed by the Rotary Club, and they were all very good quality. One of the interventions people use are cap springs, where they'll put a cement cover around a spring. 3 of them were dry, and 3 of them were 15 to 30 most probable numbers. So that's not all that good of a solution. The uncapped springs weren't that good either, 15 to 75. And we really found conductance was a good measurement, because people would say they get their water at a certain source, and if we had the conductance of the source versus the conductance in the home, we could tell whether it was actually coming from that source. Some of them use rainwater, and they say they got it from the spring, but, you know, rainwater had no conductance. And there was a lot of variability in conductance between different springs, so that was a good cross-check. The striking result was that the household water was much worse than the source water. And we had some, too numerous to count, household waters versus source waters that were, you know, in the neighborhood of 30 to 50. So there's something going on inside the house that's contaminating it, in addition to issues with the water. Some of the real interesting findings of the ethnographic survey was 94% understood that microbes cause disease. All of these people had been visited by health workers during the cholera epidemic, and they did understand that microbes was actually a word in their vocabulary, which surprised me. Only 12% were still chlorinating their water, and this was a group of women with young children. They were making the decision to chlorinate their water for their child's health over families that had older children. And there was also a church that was supplying chlorinated water to the members of the community. We found 6 biosand filters. Only 2 were functioning, but those had 98% removal, working good. 3 Sawyer filters, all non-functional. They were back flushing with contaminated water. They were not told how to use them. 63% practiced open defecation. The World Health estimate was 49. So when you talk to the people, you know, they'll tell you exactly what they're doing. So the interesting thing about chlorination, all the families said that they chlorinated their water with aqua taps during the cholera epidemic. They were supplied by Hopital Albert Schweitzer, but now they're too expensive and the instructions are in Spanish. So they're not in Creole. And there's different strengths of aqua tabs. One does a gallon, one does 4 gallons, and you couldn't tell which one was used for treating. And then there was a group of Europeans that came through a European NGO, and they told them to stop chlorination because it was bad for their health, which is really sad. Families did have access to liquid bleach. It's called Jeef, but only 40% of the people that were chlorinating their water had adequate residuals. It was still enough to kill some of the bacteria, but if we had simple pool test kits, we could really help them, you know, chlorinate their water. So in conclusion, 75% of the homes we tested did not meet safe water standards, and E. coli levels in the household water was significantly higher than the source water. And we came to the conclusion it was related to culturally related sanitation issues. A lot of them said they had soap, but they couldn't produce a bar of soap and things like that. A lot of them said they used toilet paper, but they didn't have any. So it's really culturally appropriate sanitation was probably contaminating the water in the home. And if chlorination was used, you know, just looking at our small sample set, the women that were chlorinating their water had passable water, had good quality water. So I'd like to acknowledge Grand Valley State University, the CSCE program, helped fund our project, PADNOS International Center, and the Annis Water Resources Institute. Don Johnson of Hopital Albert Schweitzer was our sponsor, and Roni St. Armand was our interpreter, did a fabulous job making contact with people, and we wouldn't have not got in to see the people without a very good interpreter. So I will end. Any questions? Yes? No, I didn't bring nitrate kits. I'd like to do that. Yes? Well, I didn't talk about that, but every family we visited had access to a cell phone. They may not have had a cell phone, but a brother or a relative had a cell phone. So we were actually able to text the data to the families after that, and we did provide everything to the hospital so they could follow up. We're trying to work with them to train the health workers to check chlorine and talk about water. That's what we're trying to do. Yes. Well, it's related to cleanliness, having clean containers, washing their hands, just basic sanitation to keep the water clean, covering the water supply. One of the ladies that had clean water had a nice stainless steel cup for her water, and she was very meticulous, whereas a lot of the homes, there was animal droppings and bird droppings all over the place. So it's just a matter of training them that keeping the water clean is important. And I think if they have a chlorine residual, that will help, some contamination. It won't, help gross contamination, but it will provide some protection. And the people that had the chlorine residual in their home water buckets, had no E. coli. Small sample size, albeit, but it was encouraging to see the families with the women with young children had good chlorine, had chlorine residuals and no bacteria. NGOs delivered them. Yep. Yeah, one man said it was made out of cement. It was inferior technology, which I thought was interesting. He was a very perceptive older man, but his was working fine. So. No, they're NGOs that came in and did their thing and left, right? But there was a lot of interest in forming a group within each village. You would have a group of people that could maintain the filters and tell people how to use them. We found no lack of interest in the water. So just the lack of the follow through. Yes. Well, I used it as a teachable moment to the people. I said chlorine was good, but I did not ask. There was three people that said an NGO. They had the same story. So, yeah.
Could you elaborate a little bit on why you think the women with small children had behaviors that were different?
The motherly instinct is very strong, and I think they actually made a choice that they wanted the health of their child over having more food or certain things. They refer to wealth as means to do things. So they would be giving up certain means to provide the water for their children. So, but it was really interesting to talk with the families, and you could just see the motherly maternal instinct. So. All right, thank you very much.